Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the AEW Dynamite Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by Andy Murray from What Culture to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite Fight for the Fallen. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also baby, Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Dubai. Pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Andy to review AEW Dynamite Fight for the Fallen. And what an awful show this was, Andy, in opposite land. Sorry, I just had to do that.
All right, Cora.
Because I thought, wouldn't it be funny if Sidge, because we know he's watched this show, I've seen his tweets.
Yeah.
And it's also hilarious that Tony waits to book really, last week's was good up to a point, but exceptional Dynamites. He saves when Sidgwick isn't here to talk about them.
Yeah.
But I also thought of him, thinking, I'll just check on the podcast, see if the boys are, you know, saying the right things. And here's me saying that to start off with, throws his phone into the pool. What a show this was, Andy.
Yeah, it was a tremendous Dynamite. One of the best of the year so far. Yeah. Usually with these, you know, we've had a bunch of these labeled specials recently. The Road Ragers, the Fighter Fest, the Blood and Guts and all of that. And a lot of them have been really good and they've had lots of positive qualities. But rarely is it that one of these things that we've been conditioned to receive as like mini pay-per-views almost sometimes. Yeah. Rarely is it that, you know, the immense excitement you get from looking at those match graphics and thinking about all the potential permutations and these wonderful combos that have been put together. Rarely is it quite as magical on the night. You know, there's usually something here or there that makes you go, oh, that's a bit of a bummer. You know, there was one particular match in here that we'll talk about that didn't quite live up to my expectations, but I still found plenty to enjoy. But Fight for the Fallen across the board was, I thought this was a tremendous pro wrestling. This was so tremendous, in fact, that the usual array of weird guys on Twitter were very angry when I said how much I loved it. So that's always a good sign that the show was good.
And yeah, I was glancing at Twitter this morning and they couldn't really seem to find anything to throw at this show either.
What, the losers? And
yeah.
What is it, the losers and trolls? Shout outs to Mongo eBooks. It's weird, isn't it? It's weird.
It flew by as well, this 2 hours.
They really did. It was one of those shows where oftentimes in AEW, the complaint about things flying by in an instant and not getting time to land is quite valid. I've agreed with that plenty of times in the past. This was one of those shows where everything fit into place quite nicely and none of the matches were like too long or anything like that, which would mean cutting time from anywhere else. They kept a couple of them really short, which I really appreciate. Couple of minor flaws here and there, but nothing to seriously dampen my enjoyment of the show. No. And I hope that this is reflected.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin the mood, right?
Oh, here he goes. What are we starting on?
I'm starting on the people who say, why are you so negative all the time when it comes to AEW Dynamite? Because then you get shows like this.
Wow, he punched the table.
It really winds me up when yourself or the Dadleys or whoever come in and critically, like you three especially are exceptional at really like, even if we're just chatting in the office, not just saying why you don't like something, but explaining why it's bad or explaining how it could be improved.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if we just blanket said, well, I didn't really like this, but I'm going to give it a pass. If that happens, then everyone's standards are lowered. And then You know, you don't get shows like you got last night.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
because people have been saying, oh, you know, is Tony Khan doing a bit of mid-booking recently? Not necessarily last week, but in recent times. And all I've seen on Twitter today is people saying, thrives under pressure, this boy, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's just to reiterate, that's why we say what we say, because when shows like this come around, you go, there you go.
You can't,
And I know they can't keep this sort of thing up every single week. And I know, you, as you say, these are the sort of TV pay-per-views, effectively.
Sure.
But, yeah, don't let them get away with all the other stuff by simply saying, well, it's better than Raw. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. You can't just be blanket positive about everything. You want your pundits. You should want your pundits to be honest and authentic. And speak their mind and pick apart why things worked or why didn't in their view. I'm of the opinion, and loads of people will disagree with this on the podcast, the Michaels disagree with me profusely, but I think that when it comes to art, when it comes to a performance art like pro wrestling, there is no such thing as objectively good or bad. There are no standards you can apply to it that are inarguable that make it good or bad.
Yeah.
It is entirely subjective to me. One man's magic, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yeah.
There's nothing objective about any of this. We can argue about that till the cows come home. But we all like different things. We all appreciate different aspects of the sport. We all see different things as positive and negative. You'll have days like this where the reaction is broadly positive because they've done a great job of appealing to so many different sects of the people watching this show. End of the day, we're all trying to enjoy a wrestling show here. This job rules so much when the show is great.
Yes.
My review usually takes me about an hour and a half, 2 hours to write on the website. I think I did it in about an hour today because I was so hyped up about it. You want shows to be awesome, but you have to hold them to a standard when it's not hitting to the level that it has in the past. And you would like, you have to be real with it. And that's exactly what we are. I feel like that's what we are.
And if you want to know Andy's thoughts coupled with this podcast, you can check them out right now. WhatCulture.com. Ups and downs for AEW Dynamite. Little spoiler, not many downs.
Yeah, the number is zero. but as always, it's kind of like there are kind of supplemental downs within those. But that's what we do. Even if we like something, we're going to go, okay, well, this could have been a little bit better. Yeah. This would have taken it over the edge, even though the whole was good. And we will speak about that specifically with the women's title match
exactly.
on this show.
Andy and I support incredibly good football teams. But there's always ways to improve on the football pitch. Well, even if you are the best team in the National League.
Or the best team in Scotland. Two stars above the badge, it's not for everybody.
Mm.
There you go. Famous, envied, and after this summer, handsome Dandy Dons.
Anyway,
Jim Goodwin.
Let's get back to AEW Dynamite because the show started at a million miles an hour with the interim AEW world title being defended. It was John Moxley versus... Oh, I've forgotten to write my name. Can you remember who John Moxley fought here?
A former WWE wrestler, Crush. Crush. Roosh.
That's the one.
You're a prick.
he attacks before the bell. He sends Moxie into the barricade. The match starts once he gets him back in there. Attacks him with corner clotheslines. Bites at his face. Moxie's already busted open within like 2 minutes of this match starting. He thought, oh, here we go.
Moxley gonna Moxley.
Yep. Jose, the assistant's there. He distracts the official and Rush swings a chair at Moxley, but Moxley avoids it, takes him out with a suicide dive, vertical suplex on the floor. They brawl back in. Moxley gets brought back out to the outside by Rush, who then chokes him with an electrical cord and dominates through the commercial break. When we come back, Moxley gets a big old suplex to give him some space, and he takes Rush down with a King Kong lariat, but Rush fires back with a snap German for a two count, puts Moxley in a cruise face. I'm messing this up. But he reverses it beautifully into just kicking Roosh's head in, basically.
Yeah, yep.
Overhead belly to belly into the turnbuckle from Roosh has Moxley in trouble. But Moxley fights out of a superplex by biting at his face, buys himself some time. Again, Jose takes the official. Andrade El Idolo rushes down and pushes Moxley off the top. Lucha Bros, Death Triangle, they all come down to chase them off. Moxley rolls up Roosh for two. He counters the bullhorns into a lariat, but then Roosh fires back with a beautiful straightjacket pile driver for a near fall. Goes for another bullhorn attempt. Moxley avoids it, puts him in a rear naked choke. Roosh decides, what's the best way out of this? Headbutts, probably. But he goes straight into a Death Rider for a near fall, and then Moxie catches him in a rear naked choke and transitions into the Bulldog choke for the victory. We'll talk about what happened after the match in a second, Andy. But what did you make of this world title match as a goddamn opener to this Dynamite?
Great. It hit its ceiling, didn't it? They beat the crap out of each other. This was like a gross, dirty brawl between two gross, dirty brawlers. Obviously, they're both a bit more rangy than that. But Roosh, at his core, his most compelling work in Mexico was him brawling all over the floor with LA Park and, you know, using the environment and taking wires and choking dudes and beating them up with chairs and, you know, throwing them into barricades and just being this really compelling, threatening playboy guy who is also a complete sociopath. And that came across here, I think, probably stronger than in his other matches in the Canverse so far. Like, don't get me wrong, the Dragon Lee match was awesome. I loved it. And I liked the Penta match a lot more than a lot of people did. But this was the first time, like, the true menace of the guy came out. He's a prick. He's a dirty prick. And he's great. He's, you know, attacking Moxley before the bell, ripping his shirt off just so he could chop him. Like, that kind of speaks it, doesn't it? You have to go to all that effort just so you can get some skin out and slap the crap out of it. And of course, Moxley being Moxley is busted open in a minute. What a guy. Like, Renee at home must be having kittens at this stage. But
it happens at home. Like, she goes,
she comes
John,
in.
John, can you just get me a, banana from the kitchen? He walks in, walks by. How are you busted open? What's happened?
Takes a blade job when he's boiling the kettle. I could totally see that happening. He's that weird guy. I love him so much.
Yeah.
This ruled hard. It had that perfect bellicose, intense energy. Great character from Roosh coming across. I mean, this guy's just got such physical charisma. I say it every time, but it's overwhelming to a degree. He commands presence. Did they change his entrance theme for this as well? I think they did, which is like, I love Mikey Ruckus. I think he does good work, but I really like the old one. But yeah, this was kind of perfect. And I think that if anyone was maybe watched that Penta match and went, a little bit sloppy this. Yeah, that is in Roosh's arsenal for sure. Although maybe I'd attribute that more to Penta in that case. I think that any fears you might have had about this guy potentially being top guy or top guy adjacent in AEW were probably swept away in a crimson tide of nasty, horrible, delicious, sweaty violence.
Yes, this was the guy that you'd hyped me up on, and I loved this as an opener. And following the match, Judas hits, Chris Jericho comes out along with some members of the Jericho Appreciation Society. Sammy Guevara's there, Tay Conti, Cool Hand Ange.
Love
Anna Jay. And Parker Coolhan Ange demands that the AEW Galaxy appreciate us. Jericho congratulates Moxley on a great match and then puts himself and his stable over, of course. And he mentions Anna Jay called him last week. She wanted an opportunity. And Anna Jay revealed she's Anna Jay AS now.
Oh, man.
Said she'd choke everyone out. Got all fired up, really, like that. And Jericho's looking a little bit worse for wear. He's got the Robbie Fowler nose tape on. Yeah. He's got black eyes and things like that. He talks about what Eddie Kingston put him through last week, a broken nose. He had to be cut out of the barbed wire spider web. I think he said something like a horsefly. He got really angry. But more importantly than all that, than what he was put through, than the fact he was bleeding like a stuck pig by the end, he beat Eddie Kingston. And next up, he is going to beat Moxley. He is on fire right now. And after 2.5 years, Le Champion will return. Over to Moxley. God, do I hate you, Chris Jericho. Excellent. There was a lot of things on this show, and I don't want to spoil the bit later, because I know you and I loved it, where you go, like, your first sentence, first line out of the gate, it sort of sets the tone. And there was a lot of things on this show where you were like, well, we know where this is going, and it was all good stuff. Talked about, he said, bollocks all that interim stuff. I'm a two-time world champion. I used to look up to you, Chris, but everything you've got going on right now is pathetic. This isn't a sports entertainment champion. It's a professional wrestling championship. And you know, Jericho, you got the balls. Leave everyone at home. I don't want a wizard or a magician, all of his gimmicks.
King of trademarks.
He says he wants the guy the OG, basically, from the Super J Cup, the Lionheart.
Yeah.
And yes, they are going to fight for the title at, and I've already forgotten,
Quake by the Lake.
Quake by there the you Lake. Go. I keep wanting to say Quake at the Lake.
Steak and Quake by the Shake.
Mate, I came in this morning calling it Wake by the Lake, so it's getting better. But yeah, they're going to fight for the title in 2 weeks.
Snake in the Lake.
Great back and forth from these two.
Yeah, the point of a promo is to promote. The key's kind of in the name. But I think if you were a bit cynical about maybe Jericho being elevated as a world championship contender, particularly following the questionable booking of last week's main event, this would have probably done a lot to alleviate those fears. This ruled. They did a really good job of establishing, or emphasizing, I should say, because these were already established, contrasting character dynamics. The Sports Entertainment Guild, or whatever. Sorry, I just shouted out an eFed thing there. My apologies. The Jericho Appreciation Society are the sports entertainers. They tell you that straight away because Cool Hand Ange is over here referencing the AEW Galaxy and taking the piss out of Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
It's funny stuff. I love that nonsense. And then Jericho comes across as such a whiner when he's complaining about getting brutalized and cut out of this barbed wire. And then he's just willfully ignorant of the man standing in front of him, saying he's going to be the first ever two-time Le Champion and all of this stuff when John Moxley's standing there with the belt over his shoulder. Tremendous, just stupid, pig-headed heel stuff. And then John Moxley cuts through all the sports entertainment crap straight away. I'm not playing these games. Shut up, Chris. You're being a fanny. Fight like you used to. Fight like the guy on the VHS tapes that I ordered from dodgy magazines when I was 12 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Go back to being the Lionheart. Go back to being the last survivor of the Heart Dungeon, which I like in particular. We love a bit of Heart Family masturbatory stuff here at WhatCulture.com, mm-hmm. as do many of the AEW wrestlers. So we're always going to shout that out. And this plays into Chris's hands so well because he loves this persona stuff, doesn't he? He loves being a painkiller one week and being a magician the other. A wizard, sorry. I'm Moxley now, apparently. And flipping between his personas, the many faces of Jericho or whatever you want to call it. So going back to the Lionheart, as he has previously done in AEW, fits that so well. The match is already over. You know, you've established what this feud is going to be. It's a good heater 2 weeks or 3 weeks before All Out as well, because it means that potentially the Punk match might still be on the table. You're telling me there's a chance. The gimmick.
Yes,
the gimmick.
Exactly. That was the thing for me. When the Jericho music hits, there was a bit of me that was like, oh no. Like, we're worried that this was coming our way.
Here we go.
We're only, what, five or six weeks
yeah.
out from All Out. And you're like, they could easily say, I'll see you at the pay-per-view. And then they go, 2 weeks. And I go, great.
Yeah.
Moxie retains. Yeah. Maybe even do the gimmick of Punk coming out as he did with Cena all those years ago in WWE, and I've got the real Chud title, and we'll decide it in September. As an ironic interim title challenger, this is perfect for me.
Yeah.
And yes, you couldn't get much more polar opposites right now than John Moxley and the Wizard.
The Wizard. And it comes from, you know, existing beef as well.
Yeah.
Cool. Good. I didn't like last week. I didn't like the way last week's main event was booked to give Jericho a win that you know, believably advances him up the rankings and Eddie getting his heat back, quotations, with the barbed wire and stuff. But this was good. And we're reviewing this week's show.
Here's an idea. So obviously Jericho loses. What's he going to do at the Pape? We still haven't really got the bow on that feud must continue. What about, instead of a hair versus hair match, because I know how much this would rile you up, a hair versus a hair transplant match, right? I know Eddie Kingston's not balding. He's just shaving it. But what if he's forced, if he loses, to get, like, Jericho hair that he can't cut?
It would take him, like, 2 years to grow. I love it. Yeah, why not? Let's go.
He basically gets extensions, but stapled into his head.
Yeah, oh, my goodness.
And Kingston's going to win, so it doesn't matter. So yeah. You get there in the end.
Ah, that's absolutely disgusting. I'm here for it. Why not?
Speaking of All Out, though, about goddamn time, they
Golly.
Have finally introduced these trios titles. They
Gosh.
Look great. They're laid across the commentary desk and they announce there's going to be a tournament to crown the champions that concludes at All Out. Love me a tourney. And yes, love me some trios titles. eventually.
Yeah, Tony loves a tourney as well, doesn't he? It feels like we get one of these every couple of months. But yes, long overdue. We've been speaking about these on our news show for, I feel, about 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Because
it was that week that they did where they were like, we're going to choose some new titles. Yeah.
And then Death Triangle were kind of like coming through. Like when they started breaking out in like 2020, it was like, okay, let's go. Because from day one, AEW has had loads of combinations. Even groups like SoCal Uncensored that have split up since then, you know, they've been replaced by other units.
Yeah.
Last night, we had another trio kind of go in opposite directions that we'll touch upon, but there's still plenty of options elsewhere. It's been a thriving, buzzing scene in the company for ages, or more, not necessarily a thriving, buzzing scene, because it's not like they book a trios match every week, but it's been, has the potential to become one.
It's been hiding in plain sight for a while.
Exactly.
And we all thought when they introduced the All Atlantic title,
here it comes.
Yeah, it was, and I'm happy for that. And, you know, Pac beating Adam Cleary and OTT.
That's
and all
right.
That. All good stuff.
I wondered where Adam Cleary was this week, but then he showed up. Yeah, and you know, I understand why they were delayed. Obviously, the pandemic made certain wrestlers getting into the United States difficult, and Kenny Omega was going to be a big part of this, and he's been injured for the best part of a year now. And Tony always said, you know, I'm waiting until Kenny's healthy or whatever. So does that foreshadow his return now that these belts are coming in? I think that's another cool aspect of this.
Could All Out 2022 be better than All Out 2021?
Oh my goodness, don't set that bar. Don't set that bar
no
for
pressure,
yourself.
But be better than one of the best pay-per-views of all time.
The greatest AEW pay-per-view to date. It's really difficult to kind of beat CM Punk's first match in 7 years and the debut of, pardon me, Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole and Minoru Suzuki, lest we forget, and the great matches on that card. But hey, look, I'm an eternal optimist, so I'm going to give it a chance, even if I'm not going to set that bar for myself.
And it's the same weekend as Clash. Oh, it's such a mad
weekend. Oh, figuring out what we're going to work that weekend is going to be atrocious, but it's a nice problem to have.
Exactly.
We work in wrestling. We can't complain, man.
Oh, no,
we can't
got to watch more wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. What a shame. We have to analyze the show that was really good and fun and we enjoyed, and even if it isn't really good and fun and we enjoyed, we're going to tell you why, and we're still going to have fun because it's a cool job.
So I said, it's harder than being a teacher, this job. Yeah. right, moving on. Dante Martin cuts a promo. Talking about the fact that if Sammy Guevara's got Tay Conti in his corner, he's going to have Sky Blue. And then there's a brilliant promo video for Absolute.
Oh,
Ricky Starks. This is great.
This is like the start of like a perfect 10 minutes of TV, wasn't it?
Well, not all perfect.
I got worked so hard by what happened here.
By the end of it. So yes, it was time for the FTW title match. Ricky Starks against me.
Richard. Hello there.
Danhausen goes to do his curse thing and then changes it into Starks' pose. Starks just kicks him as hard as he can. Danhausen comes back, though, because after Starks does his little pose. Little pose. How patronizing. He looks incredible. An absolute piece. Danhausen is a pump kick. Northern Light suplex. Starks fights out of it, though. Danhausen dodged a spear, and this was the moment we talked about in the preview, rolled Starks up, and I was like, oh, my God, no.
No.
Great near fall. Starks then just spears him. 1, 2, 3. Ricky Starks retains for now the FTW championship. Post-match, he gets on the mic. He says Danhausen was very nice, very evil, but not absolute. He's selling his neck, but he says, like last week, for real this time, I got a lot left in the tank. Let's have someone else out here to challenge for it. And Taz is like, ooh, I'm not sure about this. And then Hook's music hits. Oh, he comes out. He's got orange trunks.
For the first time as well, Taz was saying, yeah, how appropriate.
And he comes down and Starks is like, oh, bollocks.
Oh, boy.
Hook lays in body shots, pump handle suplex straight away, but Starks fights back, back suplex, goes for a hip toss. Hook just flips out of it. Crowd for that. Starks nails him with a spear, though, goes for the Rochambeau, but Hook reverses it into the Red Room. Starks is desperately trying to roll and get to the ropes, but in the end, it's like a standing Red Room.
Yeah.
Gets the submission victory for Hook. He is the new FTW champion. We're going to have to break this down into bright-sized pieces, so we'll talk about the post-match in a second.
Yeah.
But there's a nice fist bump afterwards. But Hook is your new FTW champion, And what a night for Taz on commentary. What a moment must have been watching his son win that.
Yeah, watching his son win his belt in a big, hot show, because the crowd was really good last night across the board, over the guy he's taken under his wing in Ricky Starks and kayfabe, at least. Yeah, this was just... Oh man, this was such a roller coaster, all of these components, from the vignette, which was really a megastar vignette, right? Like, so well shot, a flashy man in his flashy clothes with his flashy house.
Just want to be friends with him.
So do I. I feel like I would feel like such a piece of trash. Yeah. Like, in that, I'd be like, oh my goodness, I need to step my game up to a level I'm incapable of doing, because this guy is so cool.
Yeah, I'd have like a personal dresser. I'd be up like 3 hours beforehand, and then he'd like roll out of bed, and I'd be like, how's this? Yeah. How do you, what?
I'd probably max out my credit card on clothes, you know, that don't really fit. Those
big oversized flannel shirts.
Yeah, that'd be me, man. I'd look like a complete buffoon. The Danhausen match was perfect. You don't need to give Danhausen more than a couple of like crafty pin attempts, and then he just loses to a finisher. Danhausen's just like, the gimmick is over because it's weird, and he's going to keep being weird, and he's going to keep being over. He's going to
claim credit for Hook becoming FTW champion.
Boom, there you go. And they're made...
Soften him up for you.
Yeah, that's exactly what he'll do. He'll be like, hey, you won because of me.
And co-champions, now.
Yeah, that would be entirely appropriate for the character, and then Hook can no-sell it, and it'd be even better. But yeah, Danhausen doesn't need to be... he doesn't need to be protected or anything nonsense like that. And then the Hook thing is so awesome as well, because you said on the news today, it's honor amongst thieves, isn't it? It's not Hook being a prick by coming down. It's him, here's a chance for me to win my dad's belt.
Yeah.
Don't pass that up, mate, do you? And you know, Ricky's selling the neck, and he's also like, he's not prepared to wrestle his mate, so he's taken aback, which is why he lost so quickly. Hook is also a force of nature, like in kayfabe. He runs through dudes. He crushes them. He had to sell a little bit here, which was cool. You got to see that side of his game, which isn't explored too often, apart from his QT Marshall match a little bit. Showed some new gears, flipping out of the hip toss and countering the Rochambeau quite expertly into the red drum. And there you go. It's a shock and awe package. But the show of respect shows that relationship is still intact. Uh-huh. It's not some crazy... turn or anything. No. We saved that for a few minutes later when Will Hobbs broke my heart.
Yeah, so it's roller coaster, obviously, this.
Yeah.
You're like, yay, he's retained. But there's not really that much of a... I wasn't that worried about him retaining. Then he loses the belt, and you're sad, right?
Yeah.
But he talked about it himself. I describe it as like a bit of an albatross around your neck sometimes, this title, because it is a title, but it's not a title in terms of...
It's a renegade title.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's a bit of you going... Maybe this is a blessing in disguise, because maybe now he doesn't have to worry about all the FTW bollocks and that, and he doesn't get patronized by people saying, well, you already are a champion. He can focus up on whether it be, you know, TNT, world title, tag title, trios titles.
Hey.
And you're like, okay,
all right, Richard.
I'm all right with this. And then already, as my brain has formed those thoughts, it's snatched away. Because yes, Starks gets on the mic and he's there with his best friend, Powerhouse Hobbs, which means there's an opening for his best friend, Ricky Starks, now I've just realized. So
there you go.
Anyway,
applications.
He says this title was seen to some people as a noose, but I turned it into a tie. Great line. I'm the only one who could do that. I exceed all expectations. I work hard every week. People keep telling me to work hard, and I'll get my chance. My chance has been, though, it's been last month. My chance is right now. That again, though, this isn't a string of bad luck. It's just bad timing. And now going forward, boom. Not Wade Barrett. Powerhouse Hobbs lays him out, hits him a spine buster. Taz, as you pointed out in the news, shouts, what are you doing, Will?
Yeah, come on, Will.
Oh, I hate loved this, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like I got totally worked by this because I was so disappointed. I was like, no, it's my favorite guys. And then I was like, I've been watching wrestling for 30 years. I'm a jaded old prick, and it takes a lot to inspire that kind of response in me. So I was so disappointed at first, because like, no, I wanted these guys to be friends forever and win the belts. And then I was like, oh, hold on. Yeah, no, that's just it working, isn't it? That's mm-hmm. the exact kind of response you want from this. Ricky's promo was so great. Again, it's always good at this stage. But yeah, I took the noose and turned it into a tie. I took metal and leather and turned it into gold. So good. Just great little snappy lines. And wrestling really has been... wrestling has been behind on this guy, honestly, for about 5-10 years at this stage, man. Like, it's incredible to me that this guy wasn't already a televised national star before AEW even existed. Because it speaks to WWE's kind of Vince McMahon, really. His biases are either pal, he's not 6'5" and a bodybuilder or whatever. Ricky Starks is a beautiful man, but you know, playing into Vince McMahon's silly stereotypes that will hopefully now end.
Fingers crossed.
Of course, that to make it as a mainstream level, the idea that this guy somehow didn't tick all the boxes is wild to me. He's been great for so long. He was great in the NWA before this. He was great on the indies before this with extra talented. He was great on the Texas scene when he was doing smaller scale stuff. People overlooked him because he didn't get this grand indie run like a lot of people did, like your Keith Lees and your Adam Coles and your Young Bucks and list names, right? Mm-hmm. There's millions of them. He didn't have that same run. He didn't have that same level of free advertisement, effectively. He didn't get those shots. He didn't get the WWE shop apart from that time he was an extra and he got pushed against the wall by Ryback, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, crazy stuff. And it's taken so long. So that promo really is from the heart. He should be done being patient. Ricky Starks is a star in the making. He's a babyface star in the making at that. So for him to cut this promo and then for Hobbs to twist the knife is what made it so effective, because he built you up and then he knocked you down. And what they've done in this sequence of events is they've presented Ricky as a megastar in the making. In that video package, they've had him win. They've reheated Hook in the squash match. They've established Ricky as a babyface of the future. Well, now, of course, because the turn's complete. And they've heated Hobbs up as a bigger heel than ever before by so cruelly turning on him. They teased this in the Road 2 last week when they cut another really good promo, but there was a slight bit of disagreeing going on between Hobbs and Starks, and Hobbs, you know, got this look from Ricky as he was walking away. That suggested that, you know, something wasn't right, and they flipped it here. This was a great example of accomplishing so much in just 10 minutes of TV time. And, you know, sometimes when you fill a lot of things into one tiny slot, maybe sometimes it feels rushed. This.
Also, very impressive, we should to note, I don't want to, you know, dampen the praise on Ricky Starks, but just to refocus on Team Taz. They've had this title for 2 years. They've just passed it around three of them.
Yeah.
And every single one has had a really good story associated with it. Obviously, the sort of ousting of Brian Cage, and now the, like you say, respectful, but the crowning of Hook. Also, I've just looked on the Wikipedia page for it. These have changed hands. Fighter Fest, first one was when it was sort of awarded to Brian Cage, of course, by Taz. That was night two of Fighter Fest in 2020. Night one of Fighter Fest in 2021 is when Starks won it. Fight for the Fallen. Every single one's gone down in July, basically.
All right, and so Hook better be watching his ass next July.
Exactly. And Brian Cage, combined days as champion, 377. Ricky Starks?
378?
Correct.
Boom, that's awesome.
Wow. Story.
So really, it was like a week past the year,
Obviously
with the one extra day from the year taken over. Yeah, and Ricky's title, when he won it, like, it wasn't a perfect match with Ryan Cage, but it was so hot in Texas. Like, it was so fired up. And that cemented, like, Ricky and Hobbs as this, like, together unit, because they were bickering a little bit before that. There was some dissent in Team Taz, and then they came together and Hobbs interfered in the match. So that's, like, another nice piece of symmetry, that when Ricky loses the belt, it's him and Hobbs falling apart after coming together when he won it. Just another little detail in this rich tapestry of lore.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Yo! Yo! Listen! What came next was the Acclaimed hyping up an upcoming match with the Gun Club, I believe on Rampage.
That's right. Well, they're doing a...
They're doing a rap on Rampage. One way or another, we said they're doing a rap on... They're doing a rap this week because you do not give Max Caster... You don't give Max Caster a live mic following the events of the last 7 days.
100%.
So, yeah, one way or another.
People are going to be so annoyed. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, you know what it's going to be?
Yeah.
The pearl clutching. Oh, that's too far.
Yeah.
I've read your Twitter.
Yeah.
You can't even see the fucking line, mate. So don't get on this high horse.
You know, Vince McMahon is a billionaire. I think he'll be okay from a couple of lines in a rap song.
What did you tweet? There was a great tweet you posted. Don't shed tears for...
Shed no tears for deposed billionaires.
You.
Yeah, these people are, they're big boys. They can take a few jokes on TV, you know. It's fine. You don't need to leap to their defense.
Yes. Dante Martin versus Sammy Guevara was next. As I said, Sky Blue in Dante's corner. Tay Conti, of course, in Sammy's. I did like, I mean, we sort of said that this was just going to be a high-flying affair where they sort of mirror each other because, and they are the sort of, Sammy Guevara is the sort of dark version of Dante Martin in terms of just he's the evil one. Well, he's not evil. He's just an annoying git.
Red Oni and Blue Oni. I think that's an anime thing.
Is that a Pokemon?
I think it's Dragon Ball Y. I'm sorry, guys. I can't not do my gimmick.
So they sort of...
Cat boss.
Get into it with each other. And Guevara hits a dropkick and spins into that pose of his, which, as much as I hate him in character...
Very impressive.
It's still very cool. Martin gets in his own spin, which is great. Gets sent outside. Guevara goes after him. They sort of manage to flip and switch places. And then Martin flips and lands on his feet. And there's just a stare down with Guevara, which was
great.
Anything
you can do, I can do as well.
Yeah. They fight onto the ramp where Dante hits a brilliant diving senton running off the stage. That takes us to a break. When we come back, Guevara comes back by countering a springboard dive with a rising knee and a tope of his own. We get back into the ring. Dante hits an inverted suplex for two, standing Spanish fly for two more, and another two count off a full Nelson bomb. But then Guevara counters another dive into that springboard cutter of his and then hits the GTH for the 1-2-3. Post-match, Guevara and Conte go to hit him with like a 6:30. Sky Blue gets involved to intervene. Anna Jay runs down and just batters her alongside Tay Conti. And then Kingston, Ortiz, and Ruby Soho runs out to chase the gang of gits away.
Setting us up for Tay Conti versus Ruby, I think, for Rampage, wasn't it? This was a lot of fun. Adding Sky Blue to the mix. You know, that her and Dante are a real-life couple, so boom, there you go. Instantly makes sense from that standpoint. And also, smart baby face going, hey, listen... Ty Conti's not going to be a factor here because I've got backup. That's good. Nice game of one-upsmanship. I think Dante showed a lot of personality in this match. He's kind of coming out of his shell a little bit in that regard, I think.
A couple of people on this show did that, yeah.
Yeah. He's letting Sammy know early by mocking the pose that you're not going to get inside my head by doing this stuff. And then after then, it was interesting that the moves kind of become the taunts and they're matching each other with these flips and they're landing and they're staring each other down. And then it becomes the kind of typical one-upsmanship you kind of expect from this brand of psychology. And it is a brand of psychology. It's not just mindless nonsense that some people will portray it as. Loved the finish to this as well. It was, oh my goodness. Flipping, going for the nosedive, bouncing off both of the ropes, landing. But Sammy is just kind of like one step ahead and he follows your bounces off the ropes and comes in with a cutter. It's really good. There was one like kind of, I always call it the jumping nothing when a guy just kind of jumps into a move. There was one of those.
Yes,
which,
I saw that just getting outside.
Yeah, that rattled me a little bit and I was like, oh boy. But nowhere near enough to like put a dampener on the match. It was just like a good fun TV affair with a story that made sense with a tie and sky blue stuff. And then the save. I will say, I wish Eddie got someone, pardon me, my throat went a bit wonky there. I wish Eddie got something a little bit more substantial here.
Yes.
Him kind of firing back after the nonsense of last week would have been cool. And it's a shame that we couldn't find time for that. But it was a busy night. And like they got a huge pop when he ran down. It shows that he's kind of immortal.
And I do hope Dante Martin's all right, because I saw some tweets about him potentially being looking hurt towards the end.
Yeah, they mentioned him kind of like his ankle buckling when he landed from the... From the
cutter, wasn't it? The springboard
cutter.
That's
right, that's right. So I hope Dante's doing okay. But this was a good showing from both of them.
Yeah.
And Sammy, as the kind of flashy prick you want to see get slapped in the mouth, they've found what he is now, and it's good. It's good.
Daniel Garcia cutting a promo ahead of the main event. Said, look, Danielson's been gone for months, and I'm going to send him back on vacation.
Hell yeah.
And they're going to call me the best technical sports entertainer in the world.
He knows what he's doing. He's a very... I'm going to speak more to Daniel Garcia's character when we get to the match, but what a guy, man.
Yeah.
23, scarily young.
Ridiculous. Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, Satnam Singh there backstage.
This was hilarious.
Lethal's really not happy about an illegal choke being used in his Death Before Dishonor match. And they are slagging off the best friends. And for once, they're like, we're right here, guys. If you want a match with us on Rampage, let's just do it.
Let's go.
And we're like, I know Sanjay, we know you can't go. And Sanjay, no, I love Sanjay Dutt.
He's such a goober.
He's just like, don't take that about me, I can still do it.
The Punjabi is back, whatever. Oh,
3-on-3
God.
Match on Rampage, that'll be fun. We'll preview that tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. This was so much fun. From Trent coming in and saying, what are you doing? What are you talking about? It's like we're not standing 6 feet away in tie-dye in tie-dye suits.
Can't miss him, can you?
Yeah, it was just so much, like, so funny from that standpoint. And then Sanjay getting so fired up and, you know, going, ah, yeah, I'll fight you. And then the guys walk away and immediately he goes, what have I done? I can't do this anymore. I've screwed this up. I've ruined everything. I'm going to make us lose. Yeah, it's really funny, and it plays on the dynamics they have already. I've enjoyed Sanjay Dutt from his days in TNA, going
Me
back
too,
to
yeah.
when he was the guru and all of that stuff. I think the original player from the Himalaya and all of that stuff, he's just such a fun guy. This will be his first match in like 5 years as well. So that's interesting. But I'm kind of buzzing for Orange Cassidy interacting with Satnam Singh.
Exactly. then we got, as promised, Jungle Boy. And I think it's fair to say you and I, you know, we previewed this yesterday and we were hoping that he was going to, you know, make us more than, well, he's going to make a statement regardless. He's getting a mic shoved in his face. But you know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
And, oh boy, did he arrive here, I thought. So he comes out, Luchasaurus is by his side, and Tony Schiavone asks him a question about, you know, what's been going on and his relationship with Christian Cage. And he says... Christian Cage, you are the biggest pussy I have ever met in my entire life. And you're like, there it is.
Here we go.
Yes. Crowd loves it. He said, I didn't really understand why you're so bitter. What, because I chucked you out of one of the matches and you didn't get a bonus or whatever. But then I remembered you were strapped for cash because your wife divorced you. And later on he was like, yeah, your wife left you because you got your small cock. That's basically what he said. He goes after Christian. He, you know, acknowledges about Luchasaurus and saying that, you know, he needed someone to protect him. So he found this monster. But that monster is my best friend. And the only reason that he protected you, Christian, is to make sure that the first person who gets his hands on you is me. I could take anything you can throw at me. And then he starts telling this emotional story about burying his father and his tears hitting the dirt. And, of course, Christian Cage interrupts from backstage and he says how disappointed he is in Luchasaurus. Look, you know, I could do all these things for you. Look how I was showing you the ropes, etc. But now you're just back to being Jungle Boy's lapdog. And he said, Jungle Boy, I'm going to put you in a body bag and you're not going to have to worry about me insulting your dead father because you can cozy up beside him. Saying, you've told me all your secrets and now I'm going to prey on your weaknesses. But this is all about Jungle Boy.
Yeah. We said yesterday that he needed to kind of come out with some fire and some heat. And, you know, Christian has spent like 4 or 5 weeks just unanswered, ripping him apart, grabbing the kind of lowest hanging fruit available to him and burying this guy underneath it and taking his best mate away and like referencing his father, telling his mother and his sister they raised a little turd or whatever he said. Jungle Boy had to bite back. If he didn't bite back, he'd look like a loser. And bite back he did. Wow, where did this come from? You're the biggest pussy I've ever met in my life. Goodness gracious, you know, he really, really came out of his shell here. We've already said that earlier in the show about Dante, but here even more so, there were moments where he was kind of like a little bit wavering. But that's good in a way because it shows that this guy is like coming from a position of being quite timid and quite shy and quite reserved. So it feels real and it feels authentic. And he demonstrated some really good crowd control here as well. So like when he was talking about Christian B having a turtleneck and a small prick and everyone went, oh, and he went, hey guys, what do you think happened to the wife? Like that's really good adaptive stuff that you expect from guys like Christian who are really great talkers and always have been. So it shows that the benefit of working with Christian for this period of time, it's rubbed off on him. Really, really great. We've had some, you know, we've appropriately, I feel, spoken on this storyline in the past and said that maybe certain elements specifically relating to Luchasaurus could have used more time to develop. I think that is still relevant for sure. Yeah. But this was a really, really encouraging promo from Jungle Boy. Where did this come from? It was everything it needed to be. Guy's got a spine. Guy's not going to take this nonsense. If Christian can grab the low-hanging fruit, so can he. Wow.
Yeah, really, really good stuff. And we go from there backstage to the Young Bucks, where Brandon Cutler's saying, like, hey, guys, three of us, trios titles. Like, that's not going to happen, Brandon. But what could happen is the Young Bucks and Hangman Page. He's there just chilling, and they awkwardly wish him a happy birthday, which we all do, of course, here.
Of course.
Culture. And they go to maybe have a chat that's been a long time coming. But bloody Dark Order show up to celebrate.
Spoiling everyone's fun with their fun.
Turn it with goddamn presents and cake. What do you think you're doing?
I know, being happy. Losers. That's half a Twitter, that.
They interrupt to wish him happy birthday. Evil Uno does recognize. Sorry, we interrupted something here. But the books say it's fine. Don't worry. They walk off. Those teasers keep coming, Andy.
Yeah, they're dangling the carrot in front of you. They've been doing stuff on Being the Elite with the deleted text and all of that stuff. So this is that making it to television. And this interaction is a long time coming, like you say. Young Bucks obviously gave him the nod to beat Kenny Omega to take the title. So, you know, it's been brewing, it's been bubbling, and there's still a lot of personal barriers psychologically that these guys needs to break down before they're ready to have that chat. And it's really good kind of diversionary stuff to have the Dark Order come in, like Hangman's current friends, and be like, hey, Hanger, what's up? Really fun, nice nod, and the kind of thing that, while small, fits into a bigger picture. It makes it baffling when you see people insisting that AEW doesn't do stories. Crazy.
Just glad to see Hangman Page having a bit of direction, potentially.
Yeah.
I was annoyed.
He's been floating, hasn't he? He's been kind of drifting in the ocean, but we got someone cooking now, and it's pretty cool.
And then it was time for the handicap match, Swerve versus Tony Nese, his tiny knees, and Mark Sterling. So a 3-on-1 match, really.
Yeah, and all 20 of his abs.
Keith Lee's watching backstage. He's been banned from ringside. I'll be honest, mate, I haven't made many notes on this.
You don't really
need
to.
It was just... It was a handicap match. Tony Nese and Swerve are great. They do some stuff in the ring together. He can fight off both men, mainly because Mark Sterling's a lawyer dressed like a knockoff Captain America, basically. Yeah. Sterling did distract Swerve to allow Nese to take control, but eventually Swerve fights back. Sterling accidentally tags himself in, tries to run away, gets caught by Swerve in the ring, and Nese has been laid out. And he basically just hits that jumping kick to the side of Sterling's head to get the victory. But most important thing post-match, because post-match Nice jumps Swerve and beats him down. Backstage, Keith Lee has been concussed. And standing over him is Josh Woods.
Took me a while to kind of figure out who it was. And I was like, oh yeah, Josh Woods. That's why he's so large. Like, he's a large yes. man, Josh Woods. Yeah, I mean, we had some fears heading into this that it was going to be like, because the segment last week was so cliched. It was so raw light with the overcooked celebrity involvement from Kevin Gates and the cake and all of that. This could have been a similar pile of sludge. But it wasn't. It was probably the best version of what it possibly could be. Swerve and Tony Nese are obviously very good wrestlers. They did some very good wrestling. And the story was that Mark Sterling was just avoiding getting involved at all costs, because he's a buffoon. He's a complete idiot who thinks he can compete. And that's the act. Yeah. Just a lawyer who thinks he can fight wrestlers. So, you know, Tony gets taken out of the picture. That stomp when he was hung on the ropes was really quite spectacular. And Sterling has no choice because he's accidentally been tagged in. He immediately gets his ass kicked. Boom, boom, boom. 1, 2, 3. Maybe the Josh Woods thing. I think that it came off a little cold, perhaps, because it was just, oh, we're flashing to the thing, and it was a bit half-baked for me personally, but I think he's an excellent wrestler and they'll have a very good tag team title match.
Exactly. There's a video package with Malakai Black addressing Miro, potentially even trying to recruit him.
Ooh, yes.
The House of Black. Mm-hmm. But Brody King's like, do you know why I attacked you, Darby Allin? Because I can.
Yeah.
And he challenges him to a coffin match.
Oh, that's going to come back. That's going to blow up in your face, Brody King. But it's going to be sick. Like, I think that the match they had last week, I've never looked at a cage match in a Dave Meltzer rating and gone, oh, you guys are so boring. Like, I think that Dave gave it like 3.5. And I was like, Let the light in, man. Let the corruption of the House of Black into your eyeball.
Yeah.
It was awesome. You losers. We're allowed to disagree. I'm just calling you losers for fun. I don't actually think you're a loser. Just to clarify.
Next up, and it was ladies' night. I'm thinking, just double check on my notes here, Andy. I don't think this opened the show.
Yeah, I lost.
I liked the prediction. Yeah. And when they went world title, I went, oh my God, he's nailed it. And then they went, obviously.
Sucks that they put this in the death spot. Sucks.
I mean, no surprise, though.
No surprise. It just sucks, though.
Shout out to Adam Blair yet again for giving us the timings. 1 hour, 24 minutes, and 13 seconds.
Big which, money Blair.
Which means that despite me being way off with 1 hour, 15, I win this week's ladies' night, which means the record, don't worry, you've not got the worst record because you've played it once. Hamlet has played it like 6 times and still on 0.
Oh, what a loser.
Sidge is on 2, I believe, and I think the King of the Mic is on 4.
Wow.
I'm trying to rack up some wins while Sidge is off. So
that's a good. Well, we got one more week. So if we could, maybe if Tony could book 3 women's matches so you can really streak ahead next week, let's do that.
But yes, Adam, can you add that to your list of things to do? Not only do timings, but keep us posted on what the scores are. I think it's 4-2-0-0.
Can you dedicate an hour of your life every day to doing our job for us?
Yeah, please,
Adam.
Come on.
That'd be nice.
At Adam Wilton 4 if you want to follow him and get the advance warning of, this is ladies' night. I'm thinking, it was Miyu
Yamashita.
Yamashita, thank you. Challenging Thunder Rosa. I think I'm going to echo many of your thoughts on this. I'll run through what happened, then you can tell us what you thought. Yeah. Technical wrestling to start off with. Eventually, they fight out to the apron. Yamashita sweeps Rosa's leg, though, whilst they're out there. Rosa managed to avoid a running knee and hit a shotgun dropkick, followed by chops on the floor. But Yamashita comes back and dominates with kicks throughout the commercial break. When we come back, Rosa hits a corner clothesline and a slingshot knee drop, follows that up with running drop kicks and a Northern Lights suplex that gets her a near fall. But Yamashita's not done. She fights out of the Fire Thunder Driver and hits a really harsh series of kicks.
Yep.
A step up kick, the skull kick. For a brief second, until you realize where Thunder Rosa just is in the ring. You think, oh my goodness me, could they see a title change here? Rosa, though, is just close enough to the ropes to get to them for a near fall. They trade some roll-ups. Yamashita hits a kick combo before Rosa avoids her finisher, hits a rising knee, roundhouse kick, fire Thunder Driver, 1-2-3. Thunder Rosa retains. This was good, but maybe not as good as it could have been.
Yeah, both Miyu Yamashita and Thunder Rosa are better than this match was. I bigged this up a lot and I was really looking forward to it. So in that regard, it was kind of a letdown for me personally because I'm so invested in these people and how they wrestle. And I really enjoyed the Tokyo Joshi Pro match, which I think was actually a step above this one, in fact. So in that regard, yeah, it was a bit of a letdown. There were some moments where it felt like they were maybe struggling for a bit of cohesion. Maybe they weren't quite on the same page in a number of these spots. There was one while they were kind of jostling into position and maneuvering around on the apron quite early on that looked quite stodgy in particular and did affect how I was viewing this, which is why I bring it up. I'm not a botch guy, you know that, but when these things hamper your enjoyment, you have to bring them up and hamper the flow of the match. So, yeah, probably on the lower end of what they're capable together, but I still thought it was good, don't get me wrong. Like, it was a net positive on the whole for me. Your positioning is what it is. We can talk about the card spots until the cows come home, but still plenty of flashes of what both are capable of. Miyu getting some nice kicks in, of course. And Thunder Rosa, man, like, I thought she worked really well as well. The moments where they were really locked into each other were nice and tight. There's, you know, lots of different ways you can view these things, and all these takes are valid. But I was moderately satisfied when I was kind of expecting to be blown away, which is a shame. But like I said, they are both better than this match.
Plus, you know, maybe it wasn't necessarily as exemplified by this match as normal. But you're an idiot if you're one of those people who's like, oh, I've never heard this person before, therefore I don't care.
Complete
or I don't know anything
psychopath.
About it. I knew about it because they told me about it on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
You could go back and watch the match because that was that on a dark that they showed it?
Yeah, they replayed it on dark, that's right.
Yeah. So you can watch it there.
You can watch the
and
road
even
twos.
If you didn't like me and you'd just seen them and the road to, even if you haven't seen the bloody road to, and you went, she's been her before, she could beat her again. The world title's on the line now. Fairly quickly exemplified. Yeah, I mean, Yamashita's someone who kicks.
Yeah, she kicks really hard.
She kicks really hard.
She's a badass.
That was the story, and I got it. And Thunder wants the Fire Thunder Drive, you know.
Yeah.
It didn't exactly go to plan, like you say, but...
Good.
If you're one of those people who just crosses their arms and says, well, I don't know who this is.
I wonder how these...
How do you make any new friends?
Yeah, well, this is it, man. This is it. It's like when you meet a new person, you go, oh, I don't know who this is. They must be a loser. It's such a strange... And it's kind of... It's like a global thing. It's not just wrestling, isn't it? Where... In our microcosm, it's nobody has spoon fed me every single detail about this person's life. Therefore, because of my limited frame of reference, they must be nobody. And it's like for me, right? In every aspect, and this is every single thing: music, movies, TV, whatever, books. I don't know. someone goes, "Hey, Andy, this thing's really cool. This is why it's really cool." You might not have heard of it, but you might really enjoy it, so give it a shot.
Yeah.
I go, oh, this is a cool thing that I might enjoy.
Exactly.
When you go, they must be a nobody, or I've never heard of them. Oh, I've turned into a puddle of goo. What you're doing is you're shutting yourself off to something you might really enjoy, and that is miserable, my friends. Why would you go through life like that?
A couple of things.
It's like picky eaters. Don't be a picky eater.
Well, that's good about, that's I was about to say hate. About food. Before that, if you've never heard of books before, I've got the best first book for you. And that's becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW, written by the brilliant Michael Sidgwick, which is available on Amazon right now. And also, like you say, with picky eaters, if you've, you know, I've tried a lot of food over the years. I've kept trying food, Andy, after someone went, have you ever tried a durian? And I was like, what's a durian? Someone brought it in the office and our entire day
was ruined. I'll never try that again.
I'll never try that again, but I will still try other things, despite the fact that that may have coloured my experience of trying new things, because durian is the worst thing in the world.
Life's too short to just eat frozen chicken nuggets every day, man. And I love frozen
Benjamin,
chicken
I
nuggets.
I love Benjamin Richardson, but it was his fault.
It was that rascal.
I'm not throwing stones
brought
here.
In the durian.
Brain. Whole kitchen was ruined.
Put it in the bin.
That's why we had to move offices. That's the real reason.
Those things are banned from the train in Singapore because they stink so much. And an unnamed member of the office who I'm not going to, I'll narrow it down. I won't name and shame them, but they no longer work for us, not because of this. Fished it out and took them home because they liked them so much.
Absolute monster.
A quick word before we kind of move in. Jim Ross was not good in this match. Really disappointed by his performance here. And it's a shame because I've kind of enjoyed this role of him coming out towards the end of the show and getting his pop because he's a legend. And giving a bit of gravitas to the bigger matches. Yeah. What was he talking about early on when he went, they're not working at a championship pace? What was he on about?
No idea.
Like, for the flaws of the match, which we've gone over, the pace wasn't one of them. They were competitive early on. They were quickly working to try and engineer advantages. They were going for holds. They were going for pinfalls. It was quick. It was, you know, it was competitive. There was a spirit behind it. I was bewildered by that.
What's championship pace? I've watched a championship match in AEW go to a time limit.
Exactly.
I've watched a championship match in, you know, go a minute.
Yeah.
Like, there's no such thing as championship pace.
Exactly.
But even so, if there was, if you're arguing that there is, this wasn't the match to call out for not going to championship.
Exactly. The announcer, they're meant to enhance the action and cover flaws, not call them out. But this wasn't even a flaw. Like, if you're going to call anything out, there were other things you could have picked on.
Yeah.
It was just a shame because there are still moments when Jim, who's, you know, Jim's had a hard life, particularly over the past few years, and I give him a lot of leeway, and I hope his health, you know, starts improving and all of that stuff. I have nothing but respect for what this man has done in pro wrestling, but you have nights like tonight where he unfortunately doesn't enhance the action, and this was one of them.
Then Excalibur does his big old shopping list for the week. Chris Jericho joins commentary, and it's time for war in no small terms, the main event. It was the return of Bryan Danielson, of course, against Daniel Garcia. And there was a bit of me thinking, why is this the main event?
Yeah. What's going on?
And then,
what's going on, guys?
They showed to me exactly what's going on, guys. So it was Bryan Danielson versus Daniel Garcia. Danielson does not mess about. He immediately attacks him, beats him up, ground and pound, back in the ring. Garcia gets an advantage, though, sends Danielson hard into the barricade on the outside and exposes the concrete by pulling up the pads next to the ring. But he takes too long. Danielson recovers. Yes, kicks. Running knee on the outside. Everything's going to plan so far, Andy. Everything is going as we anticipate it would. And then Danielson goes up top. Garcia's still selling. Turns around. Boom. Missile drop kick from Bryan Danielson, and then he doesn't move. And the little worker that he is, we all go, oh, no. Because we all know, like, I've never taken a single bump in the ring, let alone a bloody missile dropkick. But we know, you hit it, you land on your back, and in all likelihood, your head snaps back a little bit, because that's a rough bump to take, and you're not even the one really taking a move here. But it's Bryan Danielson. We know what, you know, when we said he was injured and he was like, don't worry, I can still do long division or whatever it was. I was still like, still not really comfortable until I know the exact terminology here. So when he stops moving, when he suddenly is motionless, Danielson is the only wrestler I'd say that I can think of at the top of my head that can personify the referee throwing up the dreaded X without the referee actually throwing up the dreaded X. And they start telling the story on commentary, and Jericho's great here because he's piling on him, of course, and he's backing his boy, saying, has he returned from injury a little bit too fast? You know, we know that his style is hard-hitting and blah, 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 and, you know, he's missed so much time in the ring over the years, but if he wasn't ready to come back, it's not a good idea to come back, especially if you're in there with Daniel Garcia. And Daniel Garcia epitomizes that. He just jumps all over him, strikes, and he's just trying to hit him as hard as he can and get him out of there as fast as he can. But Danielson comes back, does that step up, flip thing out of the corner, and then he immediately again falls to his knees. Great sell job, this. And then Garcia recognizes what he can do, sends him into the steel steps on the outside, and DDTs him on the concrete. I'll come back to this later because I got very angry and then went, well played, everyone. Because there was a bit of me that was like, if you're doing this story and you're DDTing him on the concrete, that should be it. That should be the end of it.
That's it.
But anyway, that takes us to break. When we come back, surprise, surprise, Danielson's busted open. He is bleeding all over the shop. He tries to make a comeback, but again, not only has he got this, you know, returning from injury too soon, he's losing blood, and Garcia's what, 23, you said?
Yep, 23.
Yeah, so he's A young old pup, he ain't going to get tired. He just is relentless. They fight on the top rope and Danielson thinks, well, the only thing I can do to get out of this is hit an avalanche back suplex. But arguably, that is worse for him than Garcia. And that's what they put over on commentary. It was a great job by all involved here. Danielson fights back, though. Kick combo. Yes, kicks. Goes to kick Garcia's head in, but Garcia, technical wrestler that he is, counters that into a rear naked choke. Danielson escapes that into cattle mutilation, transitions into a tiger suplex. That gets a near fall. Garcia gets him in the old hammer and anvil elbow spot, and Danielson's like, that's not how you do it. This is how you f-ing do it, right? Hits him in gets a regalplex bridge for a great near fall as well. And then he hits him with the Busaiku knee and goes to put him in the label lock, but he's just not all there.
Not
and Danielson
there, is
a wily little git who scratches and claws his way to the ropes, and Danielson has to hit a running knee. And they're on the outside, and then as they get back into the ring, An arm just pops up from the apron and grabs onto Danielson's foot, and he's distracted and he turns round. Get off me. Turns back to Garcia, who hits him with a pile driver, puts him in a sharpshooter. Danielson's trying to get to the ropes. He can't. He doesn't submit, but he does pass out. A huge shock win for Daniel Garcia. It's revealed afterwards. It's Jake Hager hiding under the ring, grabbing people's legs. Jericho runs down. They celebrate. Garcia's face is like, I can't believe I've beaten Bryan Danielson. He has, yes, by a certain shenanigans, but yep. You would expect nothing less than Jericho Appreciation Society. But a momentous win for Daniel Garcia, this, and what a main event.
Definitely, and he shoots, you know, having an element of shenanigans is no problem here, because on the pecking order, they're obviously quite far apart, him and Danielson, and Danielson's like 50 times more experienced and stuff. So I felt it was appropriate here just to broach the kind of interference aspect of it before diving into the real brilliance of this match, which was Bryan Danielson once again leveraging real life concern into heart and mouth pro wrestling concern. It was what we mentioned this yesterday, didn't we? We said Bryan Danielson is going to do stuff with his head in this match. Because that's what he does. He knows that people know all about his history of concussions, and they know that the word is that this latest absence was concussion related. So if he comes in and he knows people are already concerned about him, as they are, because he's such a beloved wrestler who's had these problems, he knows that he can use that to hook people in. That's why he's such a great wrestler. He's the king of taking these things and transplanting them into the fictional world. So the way he flips in this match was so well done. He starts off, as you'd expect, he's the domineering ring general. There's the point where he's like, where Garcia's like chopping him from beneath when he's got him trapped. And he's like, come on, do it. Like he's
that
trying
was
to
terrifying.
It really was. He's trying to will this out of him. He's trying to be a bully. He's trying to raise this kid up, because like William Regal said on commentary at Death Before Dishonor, we can't have all the best wrestlers, because if you have all the best wrestlers, mm-hmm. who are we going to fight? He's trying to make Daniel Garcia, this young snotty punk, be better in kayfabe terms. And then he hits his head on the dropkick and the commentator's like, oh, he bumped his head there, lads. And then the story flips. Because now there's blood in the water and Daniel Garcia's not afraid.
It's not even Shark Week anymore.
Exactly. Shark Week was last week, baby, but we're still here. And Daniel Garcia's a bloody piranha, ain't he? He sniffs on that. He takes advantage because he's a savage guy himself, Garcia. He's such a complex character wrestling-wise. And he jumps on that. And the story then becomes the ring general has this massive weakness that he knows is probably going to doom him, but he's going to go out on his shield if he goes out at all. So he fights back, and his body's giving way on him. And Garcia, because he's so brutal, he's going to go after that head. He's going to hit pile drivers, and he's going to DDT him on the floor, which they set up through the Chekhov's gun earlier in the match when he ripped it up and it came to nothing. But they came back to it instead of just doing it for the sake of it. And when Bryan Danielson gets DDT'd on that concrete, it means so much more because of the aforementioned injury and concussion stuff. And Garcia's, I wanted to speak on his character a little bit here, right? Because, you know, his promos are quick and simple and all of that. They're always kind of fun because he's got this unique charisma about him. But this is testament to the idea that the character can only exist outside the ring. It's complete nonsense, isn't it? Really, we've just gone over it with Danielson, but Garcia is so complex. he's this wiry technical guy, right? And you know his style of wrestling by now. It's inspired, obviously, by guys like Danielson. But he's got like this fragile ego to him, this veneer of kind of cockiness that is really quite easily shattered. So he'll go after people and then he'll get flummoxed because he is inexperienced, and inexperienced youthful guys make these ego-driven mistakes. So here, it was him going for the hammer and anvil, which is, of course, a signature of Danielson and the Blackpool Combat Club, and Danielson immediately gets pissed off at this and flips it around. It's just really good stuff. Garcia is so good at leaping after people like a savage, but when they get the better of him, scampering away and being cowardly, and that's so relevant to him and his experience and his age, because he's a young guy and he should make mistakes and he should have flaws. This was just so good. Such tremendous pro wrestling for the reasons we've outlined, and a huge win for Garcia that also sets Jake Hager up to get his head kicked in next.
Yep.
So there you go. Great.
Really, really good stuff from all involved. Yeah, Daniel Garcia is just a prodigy, isn't he?
And yeah. Friend of the channel too.
Yeah. And just a quick word, as you were talking there, I stopped.
I saw you creasing, yeah.
Yeah, it was just, we were talking about this in the office, mm-hmm. and I feel like if people don't know about it, they should be made aware of it. Because, you know, this main event was just absolutely great. But the icing on the cherry on the cake is the discovery of how much of a, like, bully in a good way that Bryan Danielson is. So Stokely Hathaway, you may have seen, tweeted a photo of Danielson, a really close-up picture of Danielson's face saying, "This prick just knocked a big plate of like chicken wings or something out of my hand just because I offered him one. What's his problem?" There you go. And then the story we were reading earlier, I think it was Fightful. Shout out to No Crap, Just Sap, Sean Ross Sap from Fightful. Said, Danielson's a real bully. And you're like, oh no. Like, he's a real bully in real life. And you're like, oh, that's awful. I don't need to know this. I really, like, I love him. And then you find out the people he bullies, Paul White and Mark Henry. Paul White saying that he sometimes tries to jump on their backs and choke them. Like, how can you hate this guy? It's the best.
The lore of Danielson continues, doesn't it?
Such a top.
His attitude on vlogs, I find particularly
yes,
amazing.
Indeed.
Yeah. Doesn't get the young people, does he?
Yep.
He's happy in his garden, growing his radishes.
And it's going to be really exciting now because Garcia, like you said, this is a statement victory for Garcia. This is, you know, next time he wins a match like this, we're not going to say, what a shock victory because he's done this, right?
Yeah.
Well, now you can do the story that people were doing before with the Inner Circle, with like this young, you know, I'm going to take you under my wing because I'm Chris Jericho. And suddenly he's like, okay, stand a bit further behind me now. They were doing it a bit with Guevara.
You're too big for my wing now.
Yeah, and now you've got like this guy who, now, after Jericho presumably inevitably loses his world title match, he's going to be coming more and more to the fore in the Jericho Appreciation Society. Jericho's going to be like, well, let's remember his name's on the door. So yeah. I'm really excited to see where they go from here. Yeah. But
and it's a gradual thing. It'll need a bit of patience, won't it? It's
not
a simple case. It's like same with Wheeler Utah. It's not a simple case of he beat Moxley, so now he's a main eventer. Mm-hmm. Star making is a gradual process, and the best, often, well, not necessarily the best, because, you know, there are examples of WWE flipping the switch on The Rock and him, you know, exploding to life, but obviously not as Rocky Maivia. But usually it's a years-long process. That's what it's going to be with Daniel, and they've got that time. But this was a big step towards it, and, yeah, great for him. And a great match and a great show.
And like I said, I mentioned it earlier, when they did the DDT on the concrete, I got so ready to be like, oh, I'm going to bury this so hard when Danielson gets this victory. And then I was like, great, brilliant,
yeah,
fantastic.
They didn't do it.
Really, really good stuff. What an ending to Dynamite, and what a Dynamite this was. Do let us know your thoughts on it on Twitter, at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Andy Murray at...
at Andy H. Murray. The H stands for... Oh, but a toad and it's magical. I've used that twice today. I don't care.
Andy and the tuna.
Oh.
Big tuna.
Beer me that water.
Follow me on Twitter at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Myself and Andy will be back a little bit later on today to look ahead to the biggest party of the summer.
Deal with the ill.
SummerSlam preview coming your way a little bit later on today.
Good.
But for now, this has been the Dynamite Review. My thanks to Andy Murray. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.